Well, Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhara Swami. Greetings from New Jersey. Visiting my mother's house, I think tomorrow is her 97th birthday. And I did a program out in Pennsylvania. So what I'm going to do today is I'm just going to continue my thoughts for the previous week and just share with you them and hopefully have some time for questions. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksurunmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kopa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So again, greetings from New Jersey. So I wanted to share some realizations I had on japa meditation today, because that's what I've been focusing on. But first, just a little realization about doing a program yesterday in Alabama. Actually, not Alabama, but there's a joke. What is Pennsylvania? It's Pittsburgh and Philadelphia with Alabama in between. But just the concept of realization and how we see, and especially since I've been writing this Monday morning greetings, you try to see reality and you try to share reality. And obviously reality is not just the senses. It's your focus and attention to the world, and it's your perception of the world. Based on knowledge, we say jnana chakshus, you see through the eyes. Obviously, just look at the difference of opinion that people have in America. They're seeing the same things with their senses, but they're interpreting it in terms of what it is very differently according to their own ideology and conditioning. And that's just common. I also explained to you, I had this realization about autism. I forgot where I heard it or read it that you're losing the ability to interpret things rationally, or you can't, especially in dealing with other people, you can't read minds. So you really can't understand a situation just by the visual. You also have to understand the situation by what's in people's minds. Otherwise, you could see how someone can be very socially awkward, walk into a place, have the visuals of the place, but not really understand it. For example, there may be a function going on, and there may be people in the audience, and there may be a speaker. So when you see that, there's a whole interpretation that there's that someone is speaking, these people have respect for him, there's a function going on, this space belongs to those people. I should respect that space because it doesn't belong to me. But a person who can't have insight in his mind can't interpret it that way, even though he sees the speaker and he sees the audience. So it's just a really interesting phenomenon, even in terms of spiritual life, actually how to perceive things in the proper way. In fact, the perception of seeing things in the proper way, I think we could call within the realm of metaphysics. We have our metaphysics is Sambandhagyan. We not only understand things, but you can't understand things unless you make a judgment of the relationship of one thing to another. And if you don't understand the proper relationship between things, you don't actually see those things. For example, one aspect of Sambandhagyan, a knowledge of reality is understand the relationship with the body and the self. If you don't understand their relationship and you see consciousness and you see the body and you think the body is consciousness, you don't understand that the consciousness is a soul which transcends the body, then there's a whole different perception of yourself and others. One perception was, I am the body, therefore I am the enjoyer. Another perception is, I have consciousness different than the body. And that consciousness is part of God, therefore I'm the servant of God. So it's just an interesting phenomena. And as I'm doing these Monday morning greetings and trying to increase my internal spiritual life and trying to maintain my studies, it's interesting how you see things. And ultimately, according to our philosophy, actually how you see things, how you actually see reality. You actually see what's happening. Because there is perspective of the absolute reality on the temporary reality called Shastra. Anyway, just thing, I was walking into this place, this small town near Allentown, Pennsylvania, where Seshai Vishnu lives around there, and they rented a little, $50 in the Coogan Institute, somehow the town hall of the city, like the social, gathering. You come in and you see a business member is $50 a year. So it's a whole different category of what the place is. So I walked in, and as I walked in, going to the classroom where they rented, very clean and nice, very old building, almost 100 years, maybe 80. Like an 80-year-old building, different world. We passed by a hall. And, and then I go to my place and I'm waiting for my program so I can see down the hall into that hall. And I just couldn't figure it out. It was just another world. It was like a time warp to the 1950s. And, it was middle America. And it's something you don't live in. It's something you don't see. It's something that's not so much really you see on television. And there were all these, semi-cheerleader types. Or, when we grew up, there were these television shows, Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best, Father Knows Best. I'll show you how back in time this place was, outside the classroom, there was like these shelves with these books you could read, you know, people can take out. And I look, I'm sorry, you know, I'm sitting there chanting, waiting for my program to begin because the ride I got could only bring me there actually 45 minutes before the program. So I'm sitting there and I take out, I look at one book and it's, you know, it's a picture of Bill Cosby on the cover. I mean, how politically incorrect. There's a picture of Bill Cosby on the cover and it said America's father. So I turn the flap and it begins to discuss his insight into family, but more than anything else is his humanity. I just thought, you know, what era am I in? I mean, you know, how long would a book like this last? in any, you know, major city in America. On the shelf, America's father, the book on fatherhood, and more than anything else, his qualities is his utter humanity. So I'm looking into that room, and they were wearing Mouseketeer ears. There were these blonde ladies, you know, not mini skirts, but up to their knees, and then some old lady. And I just couldn't figure out what that was. You know, it was just so far back. Mouseketeer are, I don't even know if you people, you know, watch the Mouseketeer that, you know, Disney. Anyway, later I found out it was a bridal shower with a Disney theme, okay? And people wearing Mouseketeer ears. But when I was looking at it, you know, I looked at it and I just thought, you know, of the Bhakti Center, how balance has to be rooted in tradition and branching out. And then there's actually two aspects. There's one, there's a conservative aspect of a preservation of what you have based on what the past is. And there's more a progressive orientation of things is of changing things according to the reality of the present. So I was kind of looking at it and I had like, you know, kind of two contradictory views. One, maybe the nice view of it, you know, okay, these people probably have a, you know, a strong family culture. They kind of look that way, you know, they have a strong family culture and they maintain something that kind of to a certain degree within their culture, their thing works. You know, a more traditional values of family, et cetera. They keep something glued together that to a certain has value and work. And then the other side from, is that they probably at the same time are not receptive to change things that are required. So, you know, you see that kind of tension. Of like, you know, appreciation for the roots of something and the lack of appreciation for the branching out and the combination of the world as it's changing, which seems like both are required. Anyway, that was my visit to Alabama. Then it was Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi, and you know, I usually fast on Ekadasi, but I'm very practical about it. If I'm traveling and preaching or, you know, some, I may not, but I decided, yeah, I should do Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi. And I do very well on Ekadasi. I don't get disturbed. That's not the nature of my body. You know, they say like a brahmachari, you know, he can eat a lot and he can fast. I could do both. So I was fasting and also fasting from water and not feeling any disturbance. And then I thought that what, you know, Ekadasi actually means there's a reason that you're fasting and reducing your bodily needs to increase your, you know, spiritual needs, your spiritual production. And I also had the thought, and also so much of our tradition is anugata. We follow what great souls do. And, you know, there's a certain, you know, tradition in India of people fasting on Ekadasi and great devotees fasting on Ekadasi, and we follow them. And it's to increase their devotion. So, you know, after the program, and Seshayi Vishnu is really nice. He picked me up all the way. He drove 2.5 hours to pick me up in New York, drove me to the program, and another hour and a half, and three. You know, he was 7 hours on the road, or 8 hours on the road that day, and cooked the feast just to facilitate me coming. So I really much appreciate it. He dropped me off at my mother's house. And then I got at my mother's house, and I said, no, you know, I really wanted to chant a lot of rounds that day. And I had 16 more rounds to chant if I really wanted to have the proper Ekadasi and Bhakati Janani Manavi Titi. The days of Lord Hari give birth to devotion. So I sat down, just sitting up straight in the room I stay at my mother's house. And I was going to chant 16 rounds in one place. And I saw how the mind didn't really want that. You know, it looked daunting at that particular time of the day. But I just made a resolution that this is what I did, and I sat there. And it was a bit of tapasya. Not that bad, because some taste comes, but... And you know, and the 11th canto purport, there was such a great definition of tapasya, that the definition of tapasya was, we do our duty despite the irrational impulses of the mind and senses. And as I was doing, I understood how important that is, and how we shouldn't neglect that feature in a bhakti process that allows, you know, as Prabhupada said, you know, what do you do for recreation? They asked them, our movement is simply, you know, chanting, you know, but austerity, it's so important, that kind of austerity. To really just face the mind. And that's the only way eventually to conquer the mind. And tapo divyam yena kaputra sattvam shudye yasmad brahma sokyam. And it actually gives unlimited pleasure. And just sitting there and just saying, no, I should not neglect. I should not shy away from tapasya. Just because something is difficult, I should neglect the mind in situations where the mind is against my duty. And I really, you know, realization there, it struck me deep. Yes, you know, don't become soft. You're a sannyasi, a guru, you're traveling around, you're having some accomplishments, and people like your Monday morning greetings, and people like your classes, and your preaching, and people are taking shelter. That's all fine, but change the consciousness. Change the consciousness. And just meditating on that, at least my duty and all our duty to a certain extent, to not fall so easily prey to the irrational impulses of the mind and senses. If you want to conquer the mind, yesham twantakatam papam jananam punya karmanam tetvanva mohan nirmukta bhajanti mam jana. If you want bhajan, be able to sit in one place and conquer the mind and get that attraction, You're going to have to. Yesham Twantakatam Papam Jananam Punya. You have to become pious. And the only way to become pious is when those irrational impulses come out, don't follow them. So the samskaras, the klishta vrittis, the bad thoughts that have caused them, leave your consciousness. Otherwise, you follow them, they stay in your consciousness. And then the question will become, when? When? Because you'll have to do it in this life or the next life or the life after that. If you don't do it, you'll continue in the world. If you're too easy on surrendering to the comforts of your mind. So that was a very good realization for me this week, too. And then, you know, I woke up this morning in my mother's house. I didn't take any food or water, and it was just fantastic. My body wasn't disturbed at all. It just felt so regulated. So in the morning, of course, and then just sitting in one place for 2 hours, just determined. And as they say, time flies when you're having a good time. And the other realization I had, and this is a realization I had this week, and I may write about it, not this Monday. This Monday morning greetings is going to be called Wild, Wild Guru. A bogus guru guide. And I'm going to talk about this film, Wild, Wild Country. And the because I don't watch movies. I didn't even know what Netflix is, but somehow or other, someone put it on my computer before I left my 7-hour flight. Glanced at it, and you know, when you see something so disingenuous. You know, you just really appreciate Prabhupada. You just really appreciate Prabhupada. That he was fixed in the truth, sensitively presented it, but without compromise. To just satisfy the desires and whims of people. And there's a certain strength and heaviness to it that is appreciated. But anyway, so sometimes I give meditation classes. And it's kind of like a hypnosis. It's not intended to be a hypnosis like that, but just when people take guidance from a voice, and that voice is telling them to neglect their mind and go deeper into their own personal meditation. And when people get some reciprocation for that, they become very submissive to that voice, and that voice can bring them to levels of depth of meditation that normally they can't achieve. And this is my experience. So I was doing one, and I saw one person that was in that guidance go extremely deep. Person was a hypnotherapist, go extremely deep, in the chanting. And then, you know, it dawned on me that how important is this inner voice in our own spiritual practices. And I was just thinking how Prabhupada said we should listen to the sincerity of our chanting. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said our chanting should be lip, it should be heart deep, not just lip deep. So we need in our japa meditation to neglect the world and forget the body and focus and concentrate. And we need a guide to get there. And the guide can be our own inner voice. So actually just doing this, I just started to make my own inner voice louder. Just to keep me focused and to help guide me to deeper levels of concentration and meditation. Prabhupada said, listen to the sincerity of your chanting. What is it? It's the voice of your chanting. You have a voice of the chanting, and the voice of the chanting will either represent your intellect or your heart, your desires or your heart. And when I chant, I do try to invoke that. Either my heart, I have an attraction for focusing on the holy name spontaneously, or my intelligence that I understand and I want to do that. So I started making my inner voice much louder consciously. And, you know, just meditating, my voice and I would actually talk to myself. In fact, the article I'm thinking of writing this week is called The Yoga of Talking to Oneself. And I was telling myself, listen to the sincerity of your chanting and go deeper in your chanting. Listen to the heart, your voice in the chanting. There's a voice. It's not just syllables, but tajapas artha bhavanam. There's a meaning. And bhavanam, you should dwell on the meaning. And the meaning means there is you should have a voice. You shouldn't just be chanting syllables, but there should be a voice. And you can increase the volume of that inner voice. Sometimes I tell people, and this is that Krishna is hearing your chanting, and chant as sweetly as possible. And when I'm meditating, I'm just saying, you know, Krishna is hearing your voice. I'm talking to myself. Krishna is hearing your voice. Now chant sweetly as an offering to him. Every syllable is like a petal of offering, and trying to develop that consciousness. Because when you chant with a bhava or a mood, the mood enters into your chanting, but it not only enters into your chanting, it invokes Krishna to reciprocate with you and reveal himself. And that's what Shudanam is when God hears a pure heart that really wants to serve him with devotion, he reveals himself in the name. And therefore, the person who chants that name with bhav and with devotion, it is Shudanam. It's the pure name. It's the pure heart of the name. It's the pure person of the name manifests. And therefore, people who have that bhava and they chant, when people hear the name from them, they hear a more, and this is my own philosophical speculation, they feel and hear a more full manifestation of the name. This Krishna is manifesting in that name. And if you listen in the right way, you will also experience Krishna manifesting more in his person. Any person has the prerogative to manifest more or less of their being according to the relationship they have with others. So that inner voice just to keep me focused. And, you know, it's like starting a car. You know, you never start the car in fifth gear, and you, even advanced meditators never can start with samadhi. They can only start with dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So you have to kind of rev up your concentration and increase your concentration. And then the inner voice may be spontaneously your reaction to the name in terms of your responsiveness in love. But that may not manifest immediately. So this inner voice talking to ourselves, I think, is really important. In anything we do, just to keep our mind, when you go from before the deities, when you pay obeisances, you can do it unconsciously. But your consciousness has to be fixed. And that was the nice realization I got from Vaisheshubhu's class, where he said one of the keys to inner fulfillment is attention. And it really struck me, yes. He said the mind goes, where the mind goes, energy flows. And it's attentiveness. So I go, you know, the bhakti sent them, paying obeisances to Prabhupada. And you try to become, that's what mindfulness means. They have to talk to you. Now you're before your divine master, or you may just feel it. And before the deities. And by keeping focused, the spiritual phenomena is manifest in two ways. And one, I mentioned many times, that perception is dependent on attention. And that intention invokes reciprocation, so more of the spiritual object is revealed to you. That's also very, very helpful. And then the third realization I have, and you know, a codicy, and this morning, and very, very attentive. If you chant nicely, you'll always hit. You'll always at least come consciously to the limits of your surrender. Because the voice of chanting is giving yourself to God. And you'll come to the point of what else you have to give to God. And your depth of the quality of your chanting can't go past that line unless you're ready to drop that anchor. That's also what happens. Okay, so I'm leaving time for questions today, if there are any questions.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hi, Bo. Who's that?
This is Lee.
Oh, Lee. Hare Bo.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Could you repeat the part where you were saying that every syllable is like a petal?
Well, in my chanting, one sadhu told me, I heard him say that we should chant every syllable sweetly as Krishna is hearing our chanting and getting pleasure from it. So in that sense, my consciousness is, it is for the pleasure of Krishna, and therefore every syllable is an offering. And to understand that, I give the analogy of offering a flower petal. That's the idea. One thing is, I'm going to put it off because there's, let's see if anybody can unmute their phone after I... So try to unmute yourselves so that I only speak for one person. Doesn't seem to be working today.
Yeah, I was able to unmute.
Okay.
Gail, you're an expert at unmuting. You've been unmuting for over 10 years. Yeah. And if it doesn't work, then I hear about it.
Yeah. Maharaj, okay. You always make this quote. I didn't realize that you were actually quoting Shastra about the irrational impulses of the mind. Where did you say that was from?
It's not necessarily the Shastra. It's one of the 11th canto purports, defines tapasya. And it defined it in a way that was a very brilliant conceptualization and expression of the idea. But it's exactly what the tapasya is in bhakti. It's that kind of neglect. That's the austerity.
Yep. Yes, sure. Okay, thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Gail. Anybody else have any questions? Or say hello. Okay, I'm going to unmute it again just for people to say hello, and then we can end.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, this is Rajaradhan.
Rajaradhan, Hari Bo, so nice going over your house. What a
Thank
feast you made for me. Amazing. Okay, anybody else would like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Who's this?
Gordon.
Gordon, Hari Bo. Anybody else like to say hello? Hey, Gordon, you know that we're up at Pumpkin Hollow August 24th to 26th. So be nice to see you around that weekend one way or another, if you're free.
I'll talk.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else like to say hello?